So, Mr. Elling, on Nature Boy, there's this lovely, lovely sentence that the greatest joy you'll ever learn is just to love and to be loved in return. Being a singer of your league isn't bad either, is it?
No. Well, I don't know if whatever my league is, but being a singer, having the opportunity to sing night after night is a great pleasure.
I do feel much love in what you're doing. One thing that always really baffles me is how you treat lyrics. And you sort of keep hold to a phrase as long as possible. For instance, on Beware My Foolish Heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a lover who kind of let go of his mistress. You suddenly love the lyrics of the song.
Well, sure. That's one half of the equation. And you're trying to deliver the lyric in a way that has it make sense for people and that delivers the full weight of it, if possible.
And this bending of time within the phrases, to me, it's almost like what they call an enchantment in poetry, going to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Do you treat lyrics in that way, say, like a scholar, or do you do it intuitively?
Oh, most of the stuff is intuitive when you're on the stage. You do all the homework and the analytical work away from the stage so that when you come to the stage you are able to dwell in the moment and interact with other musicians and interact with the music.
Do these things change during...
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah, sure.
So this is like...
You're always trying to find a different way through if you can.
Almost like a Thelonious Monk who prepares meticulously and then once you're on stage...
Yeah, then you forget all that stuff because it's in your head, and then you go with the moment.
And it's unbelievable what you're able to do with your voice. I mean, leaving aside for a moment what you do with lyrics, incredible range, incredible dynamics and all that. Of course, that's always hard work to be a musician in that, again, league. Is it also a natural gift to have a voice like that?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely given a gift that I've developed over time. And oftentimes it surprises me that it's gone this far, because I certainly didn't grow up having this kind of expectation. But I always did love to sing, and so I'm very fortunate that my vocation has been given to me. The meeting of the gift with the work I'm willing to put into it has met with some certain amount of success.
Mark Murphy has been an important mentor to you?
Early on, yeah. And certainly through his work, you have to start someplace. And Mark was certainly the gate through which I found a number of different possibilities in the music. Mark and John Hendricks and, Sheila Jordan and Nancy King. I've been very fortunate. People have taken me up and they've been very kind to me, you know, even from very early on.
Sometimes when I listen to your voice, I almost hear saxophone players too in it. And one saxophone player comes to my mind, and that's what I hear. Sorry if you hear something else, it's Dexter Gordon.
No, that'd be great if you heard Dexter Gordon in there. Dexter's one of my absolute favorites. I think he really embodied much of what I really adore about the music.
Another very important person, of course, is Lawrence Hopgood. You're 17 years collaborator,
mm-hmm.
as you said yesterday. How long did you actually go back together?
Maybe a year or two before then. We had met each other casually, and we met again at the Green Mill when he was working, and I was sitting in with the band he was working with. And we've talked about music now for almost 20 years, which is a real pleasure.
You do arrange the things together, I think?
Mm-hmm.
He once wrote it, he pens actually,
mm-hmm.
writes it down with you together. Do you work together on lyrics or maybe even on vocalese?
Sometimes, not as much, no, not on vocalese stuff. And sometimes we've had occasion to, you know, I mean, we have very complementary gifts. So where one writer leaves off, the other one is able to say, oh, what if we did this? Or, you know, hey man, that's a little much. We probably should tear that, you know, pull that back a little. That's a little too complicated for this. We don't need to do that. We just need to do this. So... you know, where I think we trust each other, and therefore we put our egos aside and just try to get the best answers to the questions at hand.
Questions like?
Well, questions like, what does this arrangement need? And does it need a flourish here, or does it need a more straightforward reading in these four bars? Does it need an extra two bars to breathe? Does it need, you know, something a little darker sounding? What key we need to do this in? I mean, all the individual compositional questions that make an arrangement work or not work.
Choosing the material in the first place as well?
Yeah, choosing the material. I tend more to point the way and say, here's the direction we're going, and here's 80% of the material that we're doing, and then Lawrence will say, well, here's a couple of things that probably fit that, and then he's probably right, and then we finish it up.
You obviously adore balance.
Mm-hmm.
What does it take to do a slow or really slow tempo? Maybe I just was listening to Little Darling, but
mm-hmm.
anything.
Well, it needs control. You need breath control and things like that, all the technical aspects. And the song also needs a reason to go that way. And the lyric needs to, you know, justify that tempo. You don't want to sing some silly, something that doesn't have as much interest, and then make a big sturm und drang about it, you know, that doesn't fit.
Another thing I do like to talk about quickly is vocally, that I just mentioned. How do you achieve, how do you pick the solo, and then how do you place your words on a solo? This is something that, I mean, I've transcribed solos, but then putting words on a solo, that is really a secret to me.
Well, language has rhythms, and language has melodies, and poetry is a conscious effort to arrange those rhythms and those melodies. And lyric writing is, you know, one step from that, in which it's simply a matter that the rhythms and the melodies of modern and contemporary jazz improvisation have to dictate the rhythm and the melody of the lyric. So you have to know language well enough to be able to bend it to your needs, to have the rhymes fall in the right places, and have that really do a job of amplifying, if possible, an emotional resonance in the original piece.
And is this sort of a step-by-step process, or do you hear maybe a phrase, something Charlie Hayden solos, and then, you know...
Yeah, you start from someplace that comes intuitively, and then you have to perspire and work very doggedly to finish it off.
One more thing is that sometimes you improvise on the spot lyrics as well as melody,
mm-hmm.
which is even more a secret to me. If you could...
It's a matter of just opening up your unconscious and knowing the chord changes well enough to let things go. I tend to do it less when I've had more conversations, and, you know, now that I'm married and I have a little girl, because that's the kind of thing where you build up with this, you build up a whole pressurized creative balloon, if you will, of things that you're not able to otherwise express. And then the music gives you occasion to let that stuff out. But once you get married and you have a kid, then you're talking too much anyway. So then you face a different kind of pressure.
Talking about your daughter, has her process of learning, I have two little kids as well, has your process of her process of learning the language ever influenced your maybe lyrics or maybe scatting or whatever?
No, I don't know about that, but just her joyfulness has made me a happier person, and her existence in the world has made me, you know, realize the kinds of things that fathers realize, you know, what it's really for, and how much your family means to you, and what you need to do to make sure, if you can, that they're safe and happy and confident and on their way in the world, and let them know that you love them, all that stuff.
Maybe quickly going back to vocalese and improvising lyrics and melody on the spot, that reminds me of what actors have to do.
Mm-hmm.
How much of what you're doing, or what you do on stage, is acting?
You know, I mean, I'm definitely performing. I'm definitely there to, as much as I can, embody the song. It's a habit that I think has suited me well, and I hope it serves the song. I think it's always a little boring and ineffective when singers can't radiate meaning. Yeah, there's a difference between singing a song and, with a capital S, singing a song, you know? you're now, you know, it's one thing to be a singer, it's another thing to be a singer with a capital S. And that means that you understand all the parts, including the need to, not the need, but the essence of performance, which is to embody and to radiate meaning through music.
So when you sing a song like Luisa, you sort of first try to become the figure singing Luisa.
I am the figure singing Luisa. It has to be as second nature as that. I mean, I'm singing Luisa. This is how you sing Luisa.
Talk quickly about the gate. You once said it's much more interesting to give twists and turns and surprise yourself and other people.
Mm-hmm.
Did you surprise yourself with the gate?
Yeah, I surprise myself every time we go into the studio, because it's one thing to imagine in your mind how something's going to sound, but then you engage collaborators of high quality, and they inevitably bring things to the table that you could not have and would not have and did not think of. And that's part of the joy of collaboration, is that the sum is greater than the individual parts. So we come together and there's one idea, and then Lawrence puts something on it, and then John Patitucci puts something on it, and then Don Was puts something on it, and we all learn from each other about what the music is really going to sound like this time out.
The way you embrace tunes by Stevie Wonder and Open the Fire, this is some sort of a concept of Miles Davis, embracing popular music in that way. And you recorded Blue and Green and On the Messenger, there's a prayer to Mr. Davis.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's Mr. Miles Davis as well.
Yeah, sure.
And this year is the 20th year of Miles Davis' death.
Mm-hmm.
What is he to you, maybe? 2 seconds.
Well, I mean, he's the great changeling. He's the great, he's like the Picasso of jazz. I mean, he went through and spearheaded so many different musical ideas and so many different shifts of approach to the music. Incredibly protean and essential to any, really not just any jazz, you know, jazz lovers' consciousness, but to any person who's alive who's has an interest in quality music.
Right. Thank you ever so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for your time.
All right.